Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
You heard the young lady. She didn't lie. I am William Clear. This is Pop Talk and Aliens, and it is a podcast. She never lies. She could have told you that this was Bob Smith's car extravaganza podcast. She has free will, but she didn't say that because she doesn't want to trick you. She doesn't want to lie to you. She doesn't want to lead you down the primrose path of listening to some podcast that you think you're going to hear, and then all of a sudden, you know, 15 minutes in, you're listening to my stupid opinions, and you just wish that you heard Bob Smith's car podcast. She will never steer you wrong like that. Okay. All right. Settle down. Yes. Thank you for listening. We are going to talk about aliens this episode. A lot of new alien stuff has come down the wire. I'd also like to remind you that Pop Talk and Aliens is brought to you by Audible. Audible is the premier provider of audiobooks to ears across the world with well over 100,000 titles to choose from. Audible works on your phone, your tablet, your computer. You can download audiobooks offline. You can stream them online. You can collect audiobooks. I have amassed a collection of Star Wars books and alien books and musical biographies, things like that. Currently, my current Audible book is The Sixth Man by Andre Iguodala, read to you in part by Andre Iguodala himself. Yeah, it's an awesome app. You can use it with your Amazon Echo or your Google Home, all that stuff. It's great. I have Alexa like read me to sleep with my book. It's so weird. And yeah, so you can try Audible for free because you listen to the show by going to audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. That's audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. 30 days free, free audiobook. If you need a suggestion, you know, The Sixth Man by Andre Iguodala is a hell of a book, it turns out. And it's entertaining to listen to him awkwardly read his own life story. So that, for in and of itself, is worth a listen. All right, then. So let's get started with the Pop Talk portion of the show. I was going to do a review of Rocket Man, the musical, and it is a musical about Elton John. And I did. I actually recorded an entire hour of me fucking talking about that movie. I guess scene by scene, almost line by line. And when I was done, I looked at the hour running time. And I spared you that. And I spared myself ever listening to that. I just deleted it immediately. And then I went to see the movie again, this time with Charlie Crabtree. And we were going to do a review, the both of us, a much shorter review. But we saw the movie really late, and it was a work night, school night, kids, whatever. So here are my thoughts, in a nutshell, on Rocket Man. I think it was a wonderful, creative, unique movie. I think that the way they incorporate, if you haven't seen it, there are a million Elton John songs in it, obviously, but they are not always used in the way that you would expect them to be used, because the characters often sing. So the songs appear in different parts of the movie depending on the story rather than depending on when they were particularly written or released or whatever. Also, the movie kind of never, after 1976, it doesn't really make clear where you are in time. Kind of just, it's like a blob of time that things happen in. But it works because you can tell that the years are going by and things like that, so you don't need to know that, like, you know, this is when Rock of the Westies came out, and now that we're going to have a scene about it. Didn't need all that. They barely touch on his albums at all. But it's great, and I think Taron Egerton as Elton John was way beyond anything that I would have comprehended anyone doing in that role. Tom Hardy was originally supposed to play Elton John, believe it or not. He had signed on, everything was going. I don't know what happened, another movie or Rocket Man got delayed or whatever, but he was going to play Elton John. And we got Taron Egerton, which is probably better because he's an excellent singer. With the way they did his makeup, I know they shaved his hairline up so he would look balder. And, you know, they got the gap in the tooth and the clothes he's wearing. He actually does look very similar to Elton John throughout the movie. Now, he doesn't really talk like him. His mannerisms are not exactly on point, although they are when he's on stage. The way he plays, the way he moves around when he sings is very, very much reflective of what Elton John actually does. But his singing doesn't, his voice doesn't sound like Elton John, but he sings like Elton John, meaning that he emphasizes the same phrases, he does the same little things with his voice that Elton John does, but his voice is, it's deeper, it's a little more rock and roll sounding, but you don't mind like 5 minutes into the movie because you're buying into his performance and his singing is plenty good. So you totally buy into it. And I love that they explored their relationship with Bernie Taupin. I was afraid Bernie Taupin might be marginalized in this movie. He is not. He's a very big player. The one thing, though, that is it basically unforgivable is that there is absolutely no mention of his band. As a matter of fact, they go out of their way to marginalize the band. There's a scene where Elton John's still in England and he hasn't broken in the United States, and his manager guy says, "Ah, we got you a backing band that you can use in L.A. You know, they'll be there and they'll know all of your material." When Elton John and Nigel Olsen and Dee Murray, which it was the trio of them that made Elton John's early show so special, they're not mentioned. There's the only sign of his band is that on the drum, on the bass drum in the show at the Troubadour where Elton John first broke in the United States, you see Nigel Olsen's name on it, which is weird because Nigel Olsen in the movie is portrayed as a fucking guy from California who's a session musician and just happens to know all the songs they're going to play at the Troubadour. And then throughout the movie, no fake Davy Johnstone, no Nigel, no Dee Murray, nothing. Nothing. Just random dudes. When they do show them on stage, there's like random musicians. That fucking pissed me off. But the rest of the movie I thought was fantastic. Captain Fantastic, if you will. If you like Elton John's music, but you don't really know a lot about him, I would definitely recommend seeing this movie because of the way it utilizes his music. If you're a super fan, obviously you've already seen it. And if you don't like Elton John, then skip it for sure. I'm not even going to bother comparing it to Bohemian Rhapsody. Totally two different animals. Different ratings, different styles of movie. It's not, yeah, they're rock and roll biopics. Kind of, in Elton John's case, for Rocketman. And in Bohemian Rhapsody, obviously, it's sort of a whitewashed Disney version of what happened to them. Not completely, but Rocketman makes you uncomfortable in places, and it's very explicit and drug use and so forth. And I think Elton John, I don't know if I would say courageous, but I think that it's admirable that he allows these things to be shown and allows himself to be shown in the movie as an asshole. He, you know, at times has a documentary called Tantrums and Tiaras that came out a long time ago, which is, you know, a camera following him around and you see him acting like an asshole. So he's not shy about letting you know that he's got his issues. I would definitely recommend it. I was very, very surprised. As a matter of fact, just because I like to play clips and I like to kind of go behind the scenes a little more, I'm going to play you a quick clip of Taron Egerton singing so that you can hear what I was talking about before in how he sings like Elton John, but doesn't exactly sound like him. So here's a quick clip and then we'll move on to the next thing. You gotta hear a little. So yeah, there you go. You make the call on that. I think it's great. I'm not going to talk any more about Rocketman because I think I'm in like 6 minutes now and I promised I would keep it short. Stranger Things 3. I've done review episodes on both Stranger Things 1 and 2 long form, or the episode is dedicated to that. I don't think it's necessary in this case. I think we've seen what to expect from Stranger Things in season 1 and 2. And season 3 is more of the same, but done in a very good way. I'll leave the spoiler free if you haven't seen it, because it's still pretty new out there. But I thought the storyline was great. I thought, you know, all the character stuff was good. I I enjoyed every single shot that took place in the ice cream parlor. I loved that trio. I think that the development of Hopper's character as this sort of conflicted, tough guy, doesn't give a shit about anything, married with a dad who cares about his adopted daughter and her, you know, teenage development, I think it's very well done as well. My big problem with that, with this show, is that they clearly have so much money now that you can pretty much see dollar signs. You can, it's like you can see dollar bills just sort of floating around through the entire series, the entire 8 episodes, because they're using like every 80s song that was popular back then. They are using the camera in a way that should be reserved for fucking Quentin Tarantino. I mean, there's like low angles. There's this one scene where the camera just starts shooting everything diagonally. It's always on a crane or a dolly or something. It's constantly moving, and the lighting is like perfect and artsy, and it's very colorful, and it looks like a blockbuster. And I feel like, yeah, you know, you guys have got money, and you know you deserve to like kind of stretch out and be able to do a little more. But like, can we kind of a little bit keep it in the vibe of the first one, especially where it was, the first one was a movie that took place in 1983. That looked like it was made in 1983. Whereas Stranger Things 3 looks like a movie made in 2019 that takes place in 1985. So that bothered me. But again, the story and sort of the connection of, you know, the two stories before, how it all worked together, I thought was great, and I enjoyed it. One other thing that I did not enjoy was the ending. Again, without giving anything away about the details, I was very sad at the ending, and to be honest, the ending hurt my feelings. It hurt my feelings. It's not what I wanted to see. I wanted to see Victorious, you know, riding off into the sunset, everybody together. Did not get that. And I can't tell you that there was anything wrong with it. It actually made perfect sense in the context of the story and the characters and what had happened to them through the course of the series, that, yeah, they would probably end up at this point, which results in the ending. But nevertheless, the ending hurt my feelings. And that's something that I'm always wishing that, like, Star Wars haters on YouTube would do. I've talked about it on the show. Charlie Crabtree and I have talked about it in great depth. So I'll make it quick. But I always think, I wish that these guys on YouTube, when they complain about Star Wars, would just say, you know, the last couple Star Wars movies or the last Star Wars movie or whatever hurt my feelings. Because I did not want to see Luke Skywalker, you know, hanging out on an island and refusing to get into battle. And that made me sad. Just say that. You don't have to couch that in this thing that makes you sound like you're some sort of educated film critic that went to fucking NYU film school, and you talk about why it's objectively bad, and you go through all these things just to justify the fact that Luke Skywalker made you sad. It's okay. You can feel sad. Yeah, I don't approach Stranger Things or Star Wars the way these people do. I'm always preaching that, you know, I go into it knowing that I just want to have a good time and be entertained by the characters and the stories that I have enjoyed before, but I'm not going to have that lightning in a bottle feeling from the first one ever again. The original Stranger Things is completely unique. It's the music. That's another thing I wanted to mention about this new one. I mentioned how they have all these 80s songs. But they used them in place of the original synth music that they used in the other two series, particularly the first one. Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein using their collection of analog synthesizers. That music was so important, particularly in the first season and to a certain extent in the second season. In this season, it's marginalized a lot because they play so many 80s songs that it's at the expense of the original music, and I thought that was a shame also. And it plays into that whole blockbuster thing. But the point was, I wish that these Star Wars YouTubers would just say, you know, my feelings were hurt, not try to get into all these excuses about it. For me, Stranger Things, very good. But the ending, it fucking hurt my feelings. It hurt my feelings. But I will give this to the Star Wars YouTubers. They're long attempt to destroy Star Wars has actually paid off. Star Wars is as dead as a doornail. We had an episode of this podcast a while back after Solo came out and tanked about Star Wars being dead. And I actually called it a funeral for Star Wars, and I played funeral music in the beginning, and Charlie Crabtree was on the show, and he kind of convinced me that Star Wars was not dead. And he said something that kind of blew my mind at the time and has never left me since, which is, he gave the example of, you know, for people that have been Star Wars fans for all these years, how much of the enjoyment of Star Wars has actually come from sitting and watching the movies. Like, it's from playing with the toys. It's from, he gave the example of him and his kid driving his car around pretending it's the Millennium Falcon. It's reading the books. It's talking about it. It's joking about it. It's doing shtick about it. There's a million things that go along with loving Star Wars that have nothing to do with actually watching Star Wars. So thank you for that, Charlie. But let me tell you where you're dead wrong, because I'm not letting you off the hook completely. Star Wars is dead. It is absolutely dead. It's over. It will probably make a comeback in like 10 years, but it is dead. And let me tell you the final straw. We had Solo, which made $5, and that was from me on a discount Tuesday. Now we have Galaxy's Edge, the big Disney park that we've been waiting for since 2015 when they said, we're going to make a theme park. When Lucasfilm was bought by Disney, they said, we're going to make a theme park and we're going to make all these movies, and everyone was all excited. The theme park is open, although you would not know it because nobody is going. Nobody is going to that park. There have been several reports about it. If you drove down to Anaheim tomorrow and went to Galaxy's Edge, you could name your price. That's how empty it is. All you would have to do is like sign a waiver saying that you wouldn't sue Disney if you get hit by a tumbleweed while you're walking around that ghost town. Nobody's going there. Will that continue? I don't know. There have been a lot of excuses made about season pass holders and blackout dates and blah, 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 blah. The same as when Solo came out, nobody went to see it, and they said, well, we released it at the wrong time and we released it too close to Last Jedi and blah, 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 blah. No, nobody cares about your thing anymore, because of all these YouTubers brainwashing the rest of the internet. Luke Skywalker hurt your feelings. No big deal. Go to the next one. Maybe it'll be better. Probably will be. That's it. All right. Oh, one last thing about Star Wars. Sorry. And then I'm going to get into Aliens. We're 15 minutes in. Okay. Not bad. George Lucas last week. We're on July 11th. Of 2019 right now. About a week ago, George Lucas authorized a screening of the original Star Wars in 70mm at a theater in Los Angeles. Not the version with Greedo shooting first, no Jabba the Hutt scene, none of that weird stuff. The original theatrical release. The only change he made to it was that he had the Episode 4 New Hope thing, which actually was not on the original release when the movie came into theaters. It didn't have a number on it. So he put that in, but other than that, unaltered. And this is something that he has sworn against for 22 years now, since he released the special editions. He has been saying, I will never restore that original print. I will never put it on DVD. I will never put it on Blu-ray. It is an unfinished movie in my eyes. And now the Blu-ray version is the finished version, which came out in 2004 and had more changes added to the changes that had already been made in 97. So I think there are two special editions. There might be three. I don't know. He fucks with that movie all the time. So the fact that he was willing to show the original, to me, that's the only thing that could bring Star Wars back, is if they released that. I don't know why it was him that was authorizing it. Maybe there's some deal with Disney that he kept the rights to those originals and how they're shown and stuff like that, so that nobody would show the original, but he showed the original. And I think that's very, very, very interesting. If anyone can help revitalize the Star Wars franchise, it's him. And doing that, releasing the originals, would really get people excited again. So hopefully that will happen. And then maybe someone will go to Galaxy's Edge. Can you imagine all the ticket takers and ushers there? They like got to dress up in a Boba Fett costume just to sit there and sweat in the heat while nobody fucking walks around that place. Sucks. Well, I mean, I hope things turn around and it does better, but I think for right now, Star Wars, dead. Now, let's get into some alien stuff. There has been so much news. You know, it's funny. I was working on a podcast about the Majestic 12, which happened decades ago and was like a secret society of UFO people in the government. Possibly. Their existence is denied by some, and by others, they swear by it. But as I've been following the alien news over the last 4 or 6 months, there has been more action going on right now than there was back then. So, you know, I will still tell that story because it's a good story, but right now there are more pressing matters. More pressing matters than something that happened decades and decades ago. So, we've got quite a few, but let's start with one we've touched on this podcast before, and that is Oumuamua. I think that's how it's pronounced. But it is the large cigar-shaped object that passed by our planet several months ago and was determined to be from outside of this galaxy, which led to rampant speculations about it being alien.
Oumuamua, by contrast, is the first observed object to come from outside of our solar system. And get this, once it got here, it behaved in ways that scientists can't quite explain, which is why this team of Harvard scientists is floating a theory that even they admit is a little out there.
When Oumuamua was discovered last October, it was tumbling past the sun at 196,000 miles per hour. To some, the reddish object looked like a cigar. Others thought it was shaped like a pancake.
It looks very different from objects that we have found in the solar system.
Avi Loeb, chair of the Harvard University Astronomy Department, said Oumuamua did not behave like an ordinary asteroid or give off gas like a comet.
There seemed to be an extra force that is pushing it, and it's not clear what this push is from.
In an upcoming paper, he and a colleague offer what they call a more exotic scenario. Oumuamua may be a fully operational probe sent intentionally to Earth vicinity by an alien civilization.
Yes, that is another national news story about a possible alien, certainly UFO situation. And I play that because, again, I've said this a million times on the show, and I will probably continue to say it until I drop dead and stop doing the show. People love to say that UFOs are never on the national news. There's never any alien stuff. Therefore, you know, it's just a bunch of fringe people, conspiracy theorists, if you will. And every once in a while on the local news, they'll show a UFO story when they run out of rapes and murders. Now, that part is true. The local news will show some shitty UFO story when and only when they run out of rapes and murders. But the national news, as I've played over the last couple of alien episodes, has most definitely been taking to the phenomenon of UFOs lately, because you really can't just not anymore. There's too much stuff coming out, especially from the military. But unfortunately, Oumuamua is not an alien ship. Categorically, it is absolutely not an alien ship. And I have the proof right here. In an article on sciencealert.com, I don't know the credibility of Science Alert, but let's just see what they have to say about it. In an article written by Michelle Starr, hot off the press, ripped from the headlines July 1st, 2019, she says, Michelle Starr says, interstellar object Oumuamua, that strange cigar-shaped chunk of rock from somewhere a vast distance beyond the solar system is, new research has concluded, absolutely, positively, not an alien spaceship. Then there's an ad. You have to scroll past to get to the next paragraph, which says, okay, well, probably not. So there you go. She's covered her ass. The first paragraph, she says, quote, again, new research has concluded absolutely, positively not an alien spaceship, but then she goes on to say, okay, well, probably not. We can't tell for sure without closely examining the thing. Really? You can't tell for sure without closely examining it? Well, first paragraph, you were damn sure. You were damn sure. And now you have to admit that you have not examined the thing. And so, therefore, you cannot conclude that it's not an alien ship. I'm not saying that it is, but I'm certainly saying that They don't know if it is either, regardless of what she says in her first paragraph. She finally admits it in the second. And then she says, she goes on to explain that after carefully reviewing all our observations of the object, the international team of Oumuamua scientists has concluded that everything we know about it is consistent with a natural origin. Okay, aliens are not an unnatural origin, but well, let's never mind that. We already mostly knew this, but a paper last year from Harvard Astrophysics Enfant Terrible, Avi Loeb, briefly suggested the possibility that the rock was an alien probe. Let me read the beginning of that sentence again in case you didn't catch that fucking ad hominem attack that she threw at this Harvard astrophysicist. But she said, as I just read, we mostly already knew this, but a paper last year from a Harvard Astrophysics Enfant Terrible, Avi Loeb. I know what enfant is. It's baby in French. I know what terrible is. It's terrible. So I double-checked. I did my research first, just to make sure that I was right. It seems pretty obvious, and it was. It's like a terrible baby. This guy's a fucking baby. She calls this guy a baby. So in real English, what she's saying is, a paper last year from Harvard Astrophysics fucking baby Avi Loeb briefly suggested that the rock was an alien probe. It was like a spark to dry tinder, honestly, and other scientists have been running around with buckets ever since. Oh my God. Michelle, what kind of article is this about this thing? I don't even want to read the rest. What kind of writing is that? You're calling this guy a baby in French? Why are you writing articles for sciencealert.com? You should be writing best-selling books, selling like hotcakes from coast to coast. How does she close it out? Let's see. How does she close it out? She quotes a scientist saying, we may start seeing a new object every year. That's when we'll start to know whether Oumuamua is weird or common. If we find 10 or 20 of these things and Oumuamua still looks unusual, we'll have to re-examine our explanations. Okay, so Oumuamua, again, if I'm saying it right, is number one. It's number one of these things to come flying past our planet from another galaxy. So, but we have to wait for 10 or 20 more before these guys will re-examine their conclusions. So that's gonna be a long wait. Why can't they just admit, look, I'm not a scientist, okay? Obviously. I'm a fucking podcaster. I have no more credibility, maybe slightly more credibility than the person who wrote this article. Because at least I'm not going to try and tell you that it is an alien, or that it's an alien probe, or that it's something that wants to talk to the whales, like in Star Trek 4. You know, I don't know what the goddamn thing is. But clearly, they don't either, other than examining its flight paths. That's how they're determining that it's coming from a place of, quote, natural origin, by analyzing its flight path and its trajectory, saying, well, a lot of things come this way, so it's no different than them. But they'll need 20 more of those things to be able to actually tell. Or, you know, hopefully, if there is another one in less than 50 billion years, maybe part of it will break off. It'll come close enough to Earth that part of it will break off in our atmosphere, and they'll get to examine it and find out what it really is. But until then, I think that this woman doesn't need to be writing articles taunting people who are curious about the fact that it might be of extraterrestrial origin and insulting the Harvard astrophysicist who said it could possibly be extraterrestrial. Insulting him personally and in French. That is fucked up. That is not journalism. That's not even blog writing. I mean, I don't even know I don't know how credible the site is, but judging by that, it's total garbage. Let's move on from Oumuamua. There is recently, like I said, that there, you know, it's been a flag flying time for the UFO community as of late because of all the military sightings and stuff. However, according to Jennings Brown from Gizmodo, in an article written in 2018, he says our skies are watched more than ever. So why are reported UFO sightings on the decline? Reported UFO sightings have been declining in the United States for the last several years, according to the statistician tasked with making sense of all the data acquired by the leading civilian UFO investigation group, which is, as I've said before, the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, a nonprofit that investigates reports of UFO sightings. The group encourages people who have close encounters to report their sightings on the MUFON website. The organization claims that it receives about 7,000 reports per month, but numbers have been on a steady decline since around 2012. There's been a big fall off of late, MUFON statistician David Kortz told Gizmodo. It hasn't been a straight line, but I'm looking at those numbers. It was a peak in 2012, and it's been a 30 to 40% drop from 2012 to 2017. So, and then they go on to talk about a couple of other scientists that have noticed this decline in sightings. And one good answer, I thought, was Sharon Hill, a geologist and science writer who researches pseudoscience and paranormal culture, has some ideas about why there may have been a decline in reports. And she says, in today's social media culture, the way you express your odd experiences is with some sort of video on YouTube or a picture, and UFOs are really difficult to photograph. Yes, I think that that's 100% the answer, and I think I have said as much on this podcast before. People are not reporting UFOs to organizations like MUFON, which, by the way, is really old. And I don't know how many, like, young millennial people even know that that exists or to report their UFO sightings on it. They just put it on YouTube. They put it on Instagram. They put it on Snapchat. They fucking, and if they're old, they put it on Facebook. And if they're old enough to put it on Facebook, they probably know what MUFON is too. So they probably report it. So it's just, it's Facebook users that are reporting their sightings to MUFON. But MUFON says it's still committed to figuring out the truth behind UFOs. We're not alone in the universe. There's intelligent life visiting. MUFON executive director Jan Harrison told Gizmodo. He said MUFON shares the data so researchers can better understand UFO phenomenon. And he goes on to say, I'll finish up with this. He says, while there are still hundreds of reports each month, the data doesn't include many clear photos. Harrison had an explanation for why so many of the UFOs are blurry. Quote, UFOs are basically manipulating space-time. And when they do that, it requires a high electromagnetic field that distorts the images. I love that answer. That's the opposite of that Michelle Stargirl. That guy is bought and sold on UFOs because he's saying, the girl is saying, well, people, you know, it's hard to photograph lights in the sky and people put them on social media. And this guy's saying, well, it's hard to photograph UFOs because they're distorting space and time. So... there's a guy who is fully sold on the other end of things, who is trying to tell you that they are UFOs, and we simply can't tell that they're UFOs because obviously you can't pick up a distortion of space and time on your iPhone. I'll tell you this, though. I'll tell you who's not seeing a decline in UFO reports. Canada. Up in Canada, the Great North, or whatever they're calling themselves in the Toronto Raptors Warriors series, where we are north, well, we are also being visited by UFOs all the time. Let's take a listen to this clip from CTV, which is the, your gold standard for Canadian news.
The late great astrophysicist Stephen Hawking believed with more than 100 billion stars in our galaxy, the odds are pretty good that aliens exist. And he's not alone. Every day, people across Canada report seeing a UFO. And while most can be identified, as CTV's Janet Dirks reports, some things just can't be explained.
I got it.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
What the hell?
That strange light in the sky is one of 1,100 UFO sightings in Canada last year. According to the annual survey released by Ufology Research of Manitoba, there are at least three such sightings in the country every day.
UFO reports are still a thing. People are reporting them in greater and greater numbers every year.
Montreal is Canada's UFO capital, with 74 sightings reported last year, followed by Toronto, then Vancouver. It's not that these cities are on an extraterrestrial highway. It's a matter of population, says the report's author.
If a tree's falling in the forest, you need somebody to hear it. So if there's a UFO in the sky, the more people around to see it, the more reports you get.
You know who else has not had a shortage of UFO sightings? The United States Navy. Navy pilots. There are articles everywhere over the last couple of weeks about Congress taking the UFO threat seriously and referring to it now as a threat. And there is a secret Pentagon group that has been examining UFO evidence since 2007. So let me just read you a little bit of a Vanity Fair article. I picked one out of a hat because there's so many. But Vanity Fair says, in 2004, two Navy pilots near San Diego encountered what they said was a strange aircraft, whitish in color, oval in shape, and capable of accelerating, quote, like nothing I've ever seen, one of the pilots would later tell the New York Times. I think I played this guy on the podcast, and he described being called in his jet to come examine something that was floating over the ocean, and the thing took off at like a million miles an hour, and he said that a human being would instantly be dead if they were sitting in anything that accelerated that fast. So going on in this article, that alleged encounter was among the incidents examined by a secret Pentagon program investigating unidentified flying objects, which was established in 2007 at the behest of then-Senator Harry Reid, and revealed in a bombshell Times report 10 years later. New York Times. Bombshell. Big deal. National news. Anyway, enough about that. Harry Reid is obviously a divisive political figure. Some people see him as a horrible libtard, and other people see him as the savior of the working man, whatever. I don't care about his politics. Forget about that. When whatever you think about that, UFO secret group in the Pentagon investigating them. Let's hear what he had to say about that.
We as a country are certainly not doing what we should do. This is an area that is important to not only our country, but to the world. And I know that other countries are doing more than we're doing. And I think that that's not good.
There are those who think we're on the edge of disclosure, that any day now they're going to open up the doors and show us the saucers or open the files. I'm not as encouraged. What about you?
Well, I don't think I'm even close to that. I think before we get to that, I think we need to do a little work. And we're not doing enough scientific research. And there are people hungry to do that. We have academics who are trained in all the sciences. A grant to a college would be a tremendous help. They could put it out to bid, like they do, find out who would do the best job. But the way it is now, we're doing nothing.
You've said about you don't think it's little green men, and we had a lot of speculation about where these vehicles are from. They're far more advanced than anything known to us. Is it possible that nobody really, there's no one who knows the ultimate answer, what the truth is?
I think now, and the reason I'm so terribly interested in this, is I don't think no one has the answers. And that is too bad, because there are answers out there. But we're not going to get answers just by hoping they come. You're going to have to take some work.
The idea of disclosure, have you had conversations with colleagues about the wisdom of letting all this loose? Is the public ready for it? Depends on what it is, I guess.
I don't think that Congress can make this decision on their own. They could try to pass a law, but that would create a lot more problems than it would solve, because there's a big public debate on this. I don't think at this stage would do a lot of good. Pentagon needs to get somebody within the Pentagon that's willing to do something that's a little different.
You old smooth-talking son of a bitch, Harry Reid. Look, I know the guy is a politically divisive figure, but the fact that a politician of note is even getting anywhere near the subject of UFOs is progress, a lot of progress. I mean, if the last like big ticket item from the government we ever had about UFOs was Project Blue Book. That was their big investigation, and their research into UFO sightings and everything. And that ended in 1970, I'm pretty sure. And at that point, the government's official position was we don't investigate UFOs. We're not into it. Until now, we find out that there's been a group, at least this particular investigation has been going on since 2007. And then I'm going to talk about the congressional briefings that just happened in a moment here. But the idea that, when Project Blue Book ended, that everything just stopped is ludicrous. Because even if they're not aliens, the government's not going to just stop worrying about weird shit in the sky. It's not just going to discard that. when Rendlesham Forest happened in the 80s and everything, I'm sure there was some, at least, group of people that were designated to handle that kind of shit. We know for a fact that Nick Pope, the great Nick Pope, who always comes on and talks about UFOs, the British guy, talked about him on the show, have played him. If you've watched any UFO documentary, even one, he's been on there at some point, I promise you. We know that he was working for the UK Ministry of Defense during the 90s for several years, investigating UFOs. So it's never stopped. But it's finally just coming, like, to the surface now. It's gotten to the point where why be so coy about it? Why try and, you know, pretend that you have no skin in the game when it comes to weird shit flying around? And especially when weird stuff is clearly flying around and Navy pilots are seeing it all the time, to the point where they have to talk to Congress about it. Speaking about Project Blue Book, I know there's a show on the History Channel called Project Blue Book, which is like a fictionalization of the investigations that they did or something. I have been told by people that I should watch it because of my obvious interest in aliens, and perhaps it could be a topic of review on this show. So I may at some point, but I've heard about it, and I know that, like, there's an episode where the Benny and Barney Hill story is addressed, and apparently in this Project Blue Book show, it's completely, like, totally changed around to make it better for a TV show, and I can't understand how it could possibly be better than it really was, if you remember me talking about that. If you've heard any of the other podcast episodes where I've talked about Benny and Barney Hill, they were abducted by aliens. They were, like, the first recorded instance of someone being abducted, and the woman, Betty Hill, she purported to have punched an alien in the face and been shown a star map of where the aliens live. And how you make that better for TV, I don't know, and I don't really want to see. So I don't know that I'll ever watch Project Blue Book. But the point is, Project Blue Book ended 1 million years ago. Obviously, we've been investigating UFOs nonstop since. And now it's finally they're just admitting to it because, you know, at this point, why wouldn't you? So let's talk about the very recent, as of this recording, briefing about UFOs to a group of senators in Washington, D.C. This is from CNN, and it says, a group of U.S. senators, including the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, received a classified briefing Wednesday about a series of reported encounters by the U.S. Navy with unidentified aircraft, according to a congressional aide. Quote, if pilots are reporting flight hazards that interfere with training or put them at risk, then Senator Warner wants answers. It says that. Okay, because you know what happens when Senator Warner wants fucking answers. Sorry, I'll go back. If pilots are reporting flight hazards that interfere with training or put them at risk, then Senator Warner wants answers. It doesn't matter if it's weather balloons, again with the weather balloons, Jesus. Little green men, yeah. Or something else entirely. We can't ask our pilots to put their lives at risk unnecessarily, Rachel Cohen, the spokesman for Democratic Virginia Senator Mark Warner, told CNN. So that's it. Senator Mark Warner, when he wants answers, he gets them. Joseph Grashdischer, spokesman for the Deputy Chief of Naval Operations for Information Warfare. What is that? So I want to be on that. Naval Operations for Information Warfare? I had no idea such a thing existed. That's the fucking coolest division of the government ever. Except for Space Force, but that's yet to see the light of day. Or the light of the stars, if you will. Navy officials, quote, Navy officials did indeed meet with interested congressional members and staffers on Wednesday to provide a classified brief on efforts to understand and identify these threats to the safety and security of our aviators, he said. Follow-up discussions with other interested staffers are scheduled for later today. That was Thursday, June 20th. Navy officials will continue to keep interested congressional members and staff informed. Given the classified nature of these discussions, we will not comment on the specific information provided in these Hill briefings. Yes, yes. President Donald Trump. Okay. Did you get it out? Whatever it was? Your anger or your love? Your fucking guttural scream of hatred or your frantic cheer of joy? I just wanted to give you a minute to get that out, because I know that every time the man's name is said, eruptions occur of one type or another. So, all right. You back? Okay. Let's listen to what this guy had to say about it. It's interesting in that, you know, again, you know, Harry Reid, very divisive. Trump, very divisive. But putting this aside, okay, it's only in recent, the last couple of presidents that have even, like, talked about UFOs. And there's never, that I can recall, and even, you know, I was looking at things, preparing for this, to try and see if there was ever, like, an incident where a sitting president was in office and, like, being interviewed by a major network and was asked a serious question about UFOs. I mean, it's the, you know, Jimmy Kimmel asks them and stuff like that, and they hit goofball questions, like, at a town hall meeting or whatever. But, like, this was George Stephanopoulos interviewing Donald Trump. It's like, you know, primetime interview, all access in the Oval Office and all that shit. And he asked him about UFOs, and it wasn't some kind of joke. So, as much as it may harm you to hear his voice, or as much as it may invigorate you to hear his voice, you're going to hear his voice, the voice of Trump, speaking about aliens.
You and I, we know we disagree about that, but we have a whole day ahead to go on this. Before we go, one of the things you have as president is the access to all the information.
Right.
In the world, all the mysteries out there. And I was just struck in the last couple of weeks, we're reading more and more reports of Navy pilots seeing lots and lots of UFOs. Have you been briefed on that? What do you
make of it? I have. I think it's probably, I want them to think whatever they think. They do say, I mean, I've seen and I've read and I've heard, and I did have one very brief meeting on it, but people are saying they're seeing UFOs. Do I believe it? Not particularly.
Do you think you'd know if there were evidence of extraterrestrials?
Well, I think our great pilots would know. And some of them really see things that are a little bit different than in the past. So we're going to see. But we'll watch it. You'll be the first to know.
Yeah, he doesn't take it very seriously. Not particularly. All right. Well, I mean, it's better than nothing. And I don't mean that in the sense of it's better than nothing that Trump himself cares about it or talks about it or is willing to listen. It's better than nothing that we finally got into a situation where reporters are asking presidents about that kind of thing in the Oval Office, and they're not joking. So continuing with this article, several pilots told the New York Times in an article published in May about multiple encounters with UFOs with no visible engine or infrared exhaust plumes. In April, the Navy introduced guidelines for its pilots to report unexplainable events, so the military can keep track of what may or may not be happening. A Navy official told CNN at the time, the Navy does not believe aliens have been flying around U.S. airspace. But there have been a number of reports of unauthorized and or unidentified aircraft entering various military-controlled ranges and designated airspace in recent years, the Navy said in a statement. So, again, like, they, you know, they cover their ass right there a little bit with the, yeah, the Navy does not believe aliens have been flying around U.S. airspace, but there's been a lot of weird shit, which is usually how it goes. And so it goes for this next thing that I'm gonna read you a little bit of, because this is the kind of thing that that I love and love to hate. Because linked in that CNN article was a op-ed about this particular subject by a man named Don Lincoln, and you should see this guy's face. Like, I can't, it's like his face looks like if Harry Potter was like 80, and I don't mean Daniel Radcliffe, I mean if Harry Potter was like 80 and was bald but was wearing a toupee and had never brushed his teeth since the Deathly Hallows movie, that's what the picture looks like. And so, yeah, his name's Don Lincoln, and he writes an op-ed about this particular subject where he says, I'll read some of it for you. He says, for centuries, people have witnessed unexplained lights in the sky and thought that perhaps they may be ghosts or angels However, it was the summer of 1947 when a different explanation became popular. Following a widely reported incident over Mount Rainier in Washington, and then he goes on about Roswell and how, you know, over the last 7 years since Roswell, most UFO sightings have been weather balloons or other aerial phenomena. True. Fair. Fine. Harry Potter, million-year-old Harry Potter, so far, so good. Let's read on to what he has to say. In 2004, Navy fighter jet pilots operating from the USS Nimitz aircraft carrier reported seeing UFOs off the coast of San Diego. And more recently, other military pilots flying with the USS Theodore Roosevelt in the Atlantic made similar claims. The news of those accounts became public knowledge from a story in the New York Times and a new miniseries on the History Channel. There is a new miniseries on the History Channel about this stuff that I have not watched yet, but I will watch and I will review that, absolutely guaranteed. These media and entertainment reports brought the incidents to the attention of government leaders. The question that comes to mind is, are these aliens? Sadly, for anyone who was a fan of the television show The X-Files, they always bring up The X-Files in this thing, too. It's like the biggest, like, the quickest, like, fuck you, you're full of shit thing that you can throw out to someone who's talking about aliens immediately is to just say The X-Files. So it's just say The X-Files, and it's like it debunks everything anybody's ever said about UFOs because show was on and it was about aliens and, you know, it's tinfoil hats and stuff. But so, of course, he immediately goes to that. But he says, it is simply far, far more plausible that what these pilots were seeing is something with a more ordinary explanation, whether it be an instrumental glitch or some other unexplained artifact. Okay. All right. Now, see, this pisses me off and it should piss you off, in my opinion, because not only are there several accounts of these encounters, they are made by Navy pilots, trained Navy pilots, highly trained in pilots that deliver weapons, who, you know, are authorized to fire weapons from the sky. They're not an instrumental glitch. Like, a bunch of instrumental glitches happened, so they had to go all the way to fucking Congress to talk about it? An artifact? Oh, he's going to give the pilots his prop here. I'm sorry. I take it back, because of course he's going to say, given the professionalism of the pilots who reported these sightings, I am fairly certain they did indeed see a UFO. The problem is that many people jump directly from the unidentified UFO to flying saucer. And that's just too large a jump to be reasonable. There is simply no credible evidence that Earth is being visited by aliens. There are no artifacts, no clear photographs, no captured aliens, no alien bodies, nothing. As Carl Sagan often said, here we go again with this thing, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. I've said it before, I'll say it now, I'll say it again later, and I'll say it again after that. Extraordinary claims require evidence. That's it. They just require evidence. It doesn't have to be fucking extraordinary evidence. If you find a half an inch slice of the sole of a shoe that belonged to an alien, and that is in its irrefutable evidence that that alien exists, that's all you need. Doesn't have to be extraordinary. You don't have to come with the whole alien body. You don't have to come, you know, with a big spaceship in your truck. The evidence just has to be evidence. I don't understand. I've never understood that. Like, if you had one piece of DNA that was absolutely positively not of this earth, evidence. It's not extraordinary. I mean, what it means is extraordinary. The extraordinary claim is still the extraordinary claim. It's just that there is evidence for it. I'm just being nitpicky. I just really hate that quote. I think it's like, it's one of those quotes that sounds cool. And it flows off the tongue. It's easy to say. It's very easy to discredit people by saying it, but it's also just a bunch of bullshit. Just anything that you say, any claim requires evidence. That's it. The level of extraordinary is irrelevant. There, sorry. Back to Harry Potter, what he has to say again, debunking all this. The reports of UFOs are from eyewitnesses or poor resolution photographs or videos. The video on CNN where it's everywhere, it's all over YouTube, of the thing they caught on radar is not poorly photographed. I mean, it's obviously like it's like radar camera or a satellite camera. So it's not like 4K Ultra HD, but it is more than enough to be able to see that whatever the fuck this thing is that they're tracking is not normal. And when you can listen to the audio of the guys who are tracking it, who are trained professionals, going out of their minds looking at something like this because they've never seen anything like it. So, yeah, poorly photographed. I mean, yeah, in most cases, yes. Because also, as we know, that the guy from MUFON said, it's hard to take a picture of something that's distorting space and time. So what does this guy expect? Okay, while alien visitation is unlikely, as long as there remains even the faintest chance that there exist aerial objects with capabilities beyond those humanity can achieve, we should continue to investigate the possibility. Well, thank you. Thank you for your permission and your endorsement of that. After all, if these objects are real and actually move in the ways that the pilots reported, well, and the one that's on the video that apparently you think sucks and doesn't, it's something that any military would want to know about, as being aware of credible threats is one of their key responsibilities. Yes, sir, it is. There was a time in history when the working explanation of UFOs didn't involve extraterrestrials. During World War II, and before the flying saucer craze, Allied pilots reported UFOs that they called Foo Fighters, which were thought to possibly be a new weapon employed by the Germans. Who would have thought at the time that it was the formation of a band that would only start to play 70 years later? You know, the Foo Fighters played a show at the crash site at Roswell. I don't know if I've mentioned that on this podcast before, but if I haven't, they did that, and it's probably the coolest thing a band has done. They played a show at the crash site at Roswell. But continuing on with this guy, he says, that the Foo Fighters were thought to be some sort of German aircraft. He says, by the same token, these modern accounts should certainly be investigated in the event that these actually exist and are of earthly origin. However, I would be very surprised if the reports turned out to be anything other than ordinary. I've been fascinated by the idea of extraterrestrial life since I was a small boy, and I think it very likely that it exists throughout the universe. The tagline of the television show The X-Files resonates with me, I want to believe. Well, you know, buddy, if you want to believe, then you can start by not writing articles where you talk yourself out of believing. Because that's like what he's doing. It's just, he's just talking himself out of it. You can talk yourself into it and you can just say like, oh, no, nothing like this has ever been seen. This can't be anything but extraterrestrials. This is, you know, there's more evidence than we've ever had. And you know, with all these pilots, there's nothing else it could possibly be. And you could almost be reasonable in doing that because of the fact that this stuff is so outlandish. And you can see it, and you have high-level trained people reporting it and saying they don't know what the fuck it is, and they're taking it all the way to Congress, that you could say, well, maybe we're running out of excuses for this. You know, maybe aliens is getting closer to becoming a possible reason for this. Or you can talk yourself out of it like that guy. It's up to you. If you agree with Harry Potter, more power to you. But speaking of wanting to believe, someone who has in the past been taken to task on this show quite a few times for not believing, Seth Shostak from the SETI Institute in Mountain View, California, who actually did a little promo for Pop Talk and Aliens that perhaps we'll play later. I'm going to interview this guy before the end of the year. I'm going to get this guy, and if not, I'll buy you a cup of coffee. And the reason I say I'll buy you a cup of coffee is because that is what Seth Shostak said he would do if we don't contact aliens by 2036. He believes that within 24 years of his 2012 TED Talk, we would talk with aliens. And it's a long article. It's a recent interview he's done and a few months ago. The big sexy quote is, "The bottom line is, the search has become much, much, much faster. If you're looking for a needle in a haystack, it pays to go through the haystack faster." So good for you, Seth. Let's get an interview of our own on this show, shall we? Alrighty, speaking of radio waves, last September in Australia at a satellite array, a facility probably similar to what SETI uses, they recorded, they got a fast radio burst, an FRB, from deep space. And they had something like this had happened about 10 years prior in also in Australia at another facility of such. And at that time, they thought that the thing was so bizarre and would have had to have been from so far away that it couldn't possibly have actually been a signal from space, that it was some earthly interference that caused this radio burst. Fast forward 10 years later, they have absolutely concluded that it did, this recent one, come from outer space, which would obviously the one 10 years ago, which was similar, obviously did too. Many people, upon hearing the story, anytime we hear one of, the wow signal or any sort of, any satellite catches some weird sound coming from billions of light years away, it's exciting and it could be aliens. But again, in this case, according to the follow-up reporting, no dice, once again, on the aliens, in a National Geographic article regarding the fast burst that was heard in Australia in September. She says, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. That's very good. Very nice. Great. It's a good cliche way to get right into my heart. Something mysterious launched a burst of radio waves into the cosmos. Last September, the powerful pulse collided with an array of radio telescopes in the Western Australian outback. The fleeting barrage lasted mere milliseconds, scientists were able to trace the radio burst back to its source, a galaxy roughly 4 billion light years away in the constellation Grus. If you know constellations, maybe it's Grus. I don't know. The Crane. While astronomers have seen hundreds of these cosmic pulses over the past decade or so, the latest work marks the first time they've actually caught a single burst in action and subsequently pinpointed its origin. In principle, finding out where these so-called fast radio bursts come from should help scientists narrow down the machinery that powers such extreme explosions. And then it's National Geographic, so there's a lot of scientists talk here that I don't even fucking stand, neither do you. You probably do, but I don't, so I'm not going to read it. Oh my God, this girl, I'm sorry, let me just sidetrack here. The girl starts the article with a galaxy far, far away, and then her second section of the article is called A Good Blaster, and then she wraps it up with A New Hope. So, the leading theory about what these bursts are is that they are from magnetic neutron stars called magnetars, the corpses of once massive suns that lived fast and died hard. But even though hundreds of fast radio bursts have now plowed into telescopes in Australia, Russia, the United States, and Canada, their origins are still fundamentally unknown. You know what I like about that article? I mean, I didn't read a lot of it because it was stuff that's above my head. Obviously, I like that she couched it all in Star Wars terminology, but I also like the fact that she didn't pull one of those things like that girl from before, Michelle Starr, her article, where she said, what was her name from the National Geographic? Her name is, I want to give credit where credit is due, because I certainly said Michelle Starr's name enough time as a horrible fucking author and journalist. This woman's name is Nadia Drake. Nadia Drake, very, very good, well-written, scientifically researched article, and, thrown in with some Star Wars. So, well done. Thank you for not saying, it's not aliens, it's not aliens, it's not aliens. She just simply says, well, they still don't know what it is. They just know that it comes from a long, long distance. And that it is probably from one of their magnetars, their dead corpses of exploding stars. But they're not 100% sure. The mystery is still out there on the radio burst, so that'd be another thing that I would love to talk to Seth Shostak about. So we've got to make that happen. You know something Seth Shostak's not going to want to talk about, though? Missing planes. You know who does want to talk about it? Me. Back in 2014, Malaysia Airlines, Flight 370, was taken off to go spend some fun time. Some Malaysians going to spend some fun time in Beijing. Plane took off. Once it got to, it was going to cross by Vietnam airspace, and the Vietnamese air traffic controllers would pick it up from there, and then it would make its next stop at Beijing. But the Vietnamese traffic controllers never saw it. Never came in. And it's never been seen since. It remains a mystery. 5 years later, there's a million theories as to what happened to this thing, up to and including being shot down, being hijacked, and taken to another destination but never found, exploding into a black hole. That's actually a theory that was proposed. As a matter of fact, I don't usually like to dip my fingers into the murky bog waters of Wikipedia, but in this case, I've looked at these sources, are pretty reliable, so I'm just going to read you a little bit about the black hole theory on Malaysian Flight 370. I'm sorry to laugh at the gruesome demise of these people, because obviously they were either sucked into a black hole or exploded into a million pieces, or we'll get to the rest. The theory that Malaysian Flight 370 may have been consumed by a black hole received considerable attention when Don Lemon asked on CNN whether it was preposterous that it could have happened. He was criticized by U.S. Department of Transportation Inspector General Mary Schiavo, who, while appearing on CNN, said that a small black hole would suck in our entire universe, so we know it's not that. TheWire.com, which, quote, wasn't satisfied with her answer, obtained detailed reasons why a black hole couldn't swallow a plane from Columbia University astronomy professor David J. Heflin and Peter Mickelson, a professor of physics at Stanford University. It's possible that Schiavo was expressing herself humorously and did not expect to be taken literally. Another hypothesis is that a meteor may have struck the plane. However, the statistical probability for this is extremely low. I think she was probably kind of kidding, and I think that it's pretty funny that The Wire went to a Columbia University and Stanford University astronomer and physicist and asked them, and that they answered. That's a lot to go through just to respond to an off-the-cuff comment about something that is fairly ridiculous. The thing about this, though, and the reason I bring it up, also because Coy Huynh posted it on our Facebook page, which you should join, facebook.com/poptalkaliens. facebook.com/poptalkaliens. Come on over, join. I don't post all the time. Besides, Facebook doesn't show page posts to anybody anyway, so you're never going to see anything. But if you want to post a story like this so that I can get all riled up and excited about it, then I would love that, and we'll talk about it on the show. But so this part is my favorite part. A poll posted on CNN's website reported that 9% of respondents thought it was either very or somewhat likely that the plane was abducted by aliens, time travelers, or beings from another dimension. 9%. Now, obviously, I mean, I don't know how many people were in that poll, and I'm sure that some of them were kidding. But, you know, some of them believe that. And, well, fuck, man, they haven't found it yet, have they? Have they? My money says that 2,000 years from now, let's say 200 years from now, like a ship like the Enterprise will land on a planet, and that airplane will be there, and it'll be all tricked out by the aliens that took it away. Hopefully the people will be safely delivered back, although they won't know anybody when they get home. But let's not focus on the sad part of it, just the fact that aliens stole a plane. Let's keep it funny. Speaking of funny, and speaking of awesome, and speaking of aliens, now, ladies and gentlemen, the piece de resistance of this particular episode of Pop Talking Aliens. The Raid Area 51 Facebook, the official group is called Storm Area 51, They Can't Stop All of Us. Now, if you have not heard about this, this is a Facebook page that was started just very recently. I just heard about it. I had already actually recorded a whole bunch of this podcast, fucking tore it up, started all over. I didn't just add this to existing material. This whole podcast in one. And it is July 15th, 2019. And as of July 15th, 2019, Storm Area 51, They Can't Stop All of Us, which is a Facebook group that is planning to storm Area 51, group of civilians, has amassed 1 million people who have listed themselves as going, with another 1 million marked as interested. I marked myself as going. I figure with this podcast and stuff, if there's a fucking government conspiracy watch list, I'm already on it. So might as well just, see if I can up my profile a bit by, clicking that I'm going. So the details of this particular endeavor are, we will meet up at the Area 51 Center tourist attraction and coordinator entry. If we Naruto run, we can move faster than their bullets. Let's see them aliens. I asked my son what Naruto running is, because he used to watch the anime show Naruto, and he said, from what I can understand, it's some sort of running where you put your hands like behind you and you put your head forward and you run really fast and you dodge bullets or something. I don't know. There's some weird millennial stuff in there, but they do also put in the page, they put, P.S. Hello, U.S. government. This is a joke and I do not actually intend to go ahead with this plan. I just thought it would be funny and get me some thumbsy upsies on the internet. That's the pinned post that's on that page. But they have so many people now checking themselves as going. They just got a warning from the U.S. Air Force that says, quote, Area 51 is an open training range for the U.S. Air Force, and we would discourage anyone from trying to come into the area where we train American armed forces. The U.S. Air Force always stands ready to protect America and its assets. Now, by assets, of course, mean aliens. I would think, right? You always stand by to protect our people and our aliens. But the thing about this, first of all, I'm very curious because somebody's going to go, like, to hang out. I would go to hang out if I could, and maybe I will. I'll just go down there. The idea of people invading Area 51, if you've seen the movie Area 51, you should see it. It's brilliantly bad. It's just so bad and great. It's basically, I've talked about it before, but it's like a found footage movie where these kids sneak into Area 51 by eating like these pills that make their body temperature lower, and they wear like these reflective suits, and they basically just walk right into the place, and then, of course, they find aliens and they all get abducted and killed by the aliens. But if you like Area 51, if you like the lore, if you've seen the Bob Lazar documentary and you want to have some fast food Area 51 entertainment thrown right in your face that it's bad for you but it tastes so good, see Area 51. But when I first heard this story, which is only like a few days ago, somebody first told me about this. I thought it was like this like small group of people, like that movie that was like they were going to get together and try to do some crazy shit. And I said to him, if you were going to do something like that, I mean, you'd need like at least like a couple hundred thousand people. And then he was telling me about how fast this thing was going. And now here we are just a few days later and it's a million. Now, again, obviously, another million interested. Obviously, there's a million people are not going to raid Area 51 at 3 a.m. on September 20th. If they were, they wouldn't give away their meeting place, the time, and the date. But let's just imagine for a minute what it would be like if 1 million people somehow were able to get to a meeting place near Area 51. But forget about the logistics of it, all right? Obviously, that's not possible. First of all, you can't, like, almost all of the land that's anywhere near Area 51 is owned by the U.S. government. So you're trespassing almost if you go anywhere, right? They've grabbed all the land because people used to hang out real close by and be able to see the test flights and stuff. Now, if you want to actually be able to see, get to a point where you're on public land and can see any test flights or things flying above Area 51, you literally have to be a trained mountain climber, like literally a trained mountain climber. To get, because the few areas left, the few ridges left where you can still see anything are so, like, the terrain is so unforgiving and it's so high up that you literally have to climb it like a mountain climber. So if you're not like a trained mountain climber or a fucking extreme hiker, don't bother trying to see Area 51. But there are places that I assume the tourist place they're talking about is the Little Alien in Rachel, Nevada, right past Area 51, down the extraterrestrial highway, which is what it's called. You know, there's just no room for a million people to meet up there. It's very small. So, but let's forget that. Forget about the logistics of it. Let's just say that a million people could find a place to meet a million people and then storm Area 51. I've been running through this in my mind for the last couple of days since I heard about this, and I've been reading about it. To me, what would have to happen is you would have to have the million people. They all would have had to have coordinated it offline and obviously not announced anything on any sort of social media and not given the government the date and time and place that they were going to be. And they would, all of them, every last one of them would have to be carrying firearms and well-trained in how to use such firearms and willing to die. I mean, very willing to die and expecting to die, because most of them would die. Because let's say that a million people just kind of come out of the woodwork of the dark and they get right at the gate of Area 51. Like, again, forgetting all logistics and all practicalities, that all of a sudden they just show up right there at the gate. The gate to Area 51, the very famous gate with the, deadly weapon, you know, we'll shoot you if you come in, basically. Use of deadly force authorized. That's what I could not get into my brain. That's what it says. You can drive up to that gate, and that's as far as you can go, and then, you know, you get back on the road. If you try to go past that, you'll get, you know, you won't get shot, but you'll get arrested or you'll get a citation or something. It's a private company that does the security for that outer perimeter of Area 51. It's not government agents. I was chased by one of those, by a truck driven by those private security people. Again, yeah, check out my Area 51 podcast. I'm gonna bang the drum for you to listen to another episode, because you can hear that whole story. It's down on the list there on iTunes, and you can see it on YouTube, whatever. Point being, getting back to the subject, at that gate, even if you were, there's like one truck up on a hill that's watching that gate, right? And who knows how much more behind that, but initially you're only up against a couple of people in a truck. So fine, you know, step one, the million people right in there, storm the gate, wax the two dudes in the car. They're not even going to see it coming. You got a million people. They've all got firearms. They all know how to use them. And they're not doing Japanese anime bullshit. They're running in, like, you know, full formation, guns, you know, up on the shoulder, fingers on the trigger, proper form, the whole thing, you know, doing the thing with their fist, you know, when you tell someone to stop behind you and you put your fist up, they're doing all that shit. A million of them. All right. Got past the first thing. Fine. Got through the gate. Fine. You're still miles away from the base at that point. Like, you have to run through unforgiving desert for miles before you actually got to the base. By the time it would take even a million people armed to get from gate with truck and the deadly force sign to actually getting to whatever security measures come at the end of all those miles of desert between the gate and the base, at that point, I have to imagine that jets will be scrambled. Personnel will be, the garrison will be deployed at Area 51. There's like 6 billion other military bases around there. So you're basically going to have like the weight of the military on your ass. And then it's just going to be the bloodiest massacre on the face of the earth. Although, you know, I don't know, I should probably give a little more credit to our million people there trained with guns. If they could all shoot, and they all knew what they were doing, and they're all running as fast as they can, in the time that all the responders came, you probably would get a decent bloodbath of civilians and military and private security all dead. You'd probably get a lot of casualties from every category. It would be a fucking bloodbath. It would be kind of like a Braveheart type of thing, I guess, at a certain point when when all of the security for Area 51 and the million people came crashing against each other. But then you'd have helicopters and jets flying down, just shooting indiscriminately into the crowd, and a million people are shooting guns, and all these security people and military people are shooting back, and then finally they have to just fucking pull out one of the UFOs to use its ray gun so that it can start killing hundreds of thousands of people at a time. September 20th, that's when it's going to happen, except they aren't going to have guns, and a million people aren't really going, but I'm hoping some people will show up to like barbecue some hot dogs and talk about Bob Lazar and stuff and see if they see any flights in the sky. If I were in charge of operations down there, particularly at S4, the area where Bob Lazar was, I'd do a test flight that night. Throw them a bone. Throw the people that showed up a bone. Just be like, look, all right, there's only like, look, we sent all the people, because you know they're going to be scrambling extra security that night for sure. They've already issued a statement. So they're going to, you know, they're going to be on full alert. But just be like, all right, look, is everything's good? You checked all the infrared shit. There's not like actual million people there with guns and stuff. There's like 80 people at the alien and they're barbecuing and they're telling stories and stuff. All right. Launch the sport model UFO. Just run in 5 minutes. 5 minutes up in the sky. Tell it to do the twisty, the loop-de-loo thing that we love to do with it, and then bring it down. Just throw them a bone. Come on. They went to a lot of trouble. They're not hurting anybody. Maybe I'll be there. Maybe they'll do that. I don't know. I will keep following this, and I will keep you updated. And if I do go there, absolutely, of course, I will live podcast from there. It would be the greatest episode of the show that ever lived. But until such time as that happens, or my next episode comes, which will be before September 20th. I hope I take so long with these. I'm sorry. To those of you who listen to this regularly, I so appreciate that you do that. And, you know, I wish I could cut more time out of other things to be able to do more shows. But I also like to make sure I put together all the information and give you a nicely crafted, curated show. I don't want to just show up and start talking, you know, you're not listening to the show just because of me. You're listening because of the subject matter. So I need to make sure that the subject matter is prepared for me to serve it up to you in an attractive and delicious manner. So thank you for listening. Again, Pop Talk and Aliens is sponsored by audibletrial.com. Get a free audiobook. Get free 30 days of Audible. It's totally worth it. There's no risk. Enjoy an audiobook on Pop Talk and Aliens. Go to audibletrial.com/poptalkandaliens. And until then, cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
I'm Seth Shostak, and you're listening to Pop Talk and Aliens, if you can believe that.